Okay, thank you for the introduction. So today I would like to talk mostly about atomic high harmonic generation with circular polarization, and I hope I'll have time to say a few words about ionization with circular polarization as well. So we've seen last week that we do have a recollision with circular polarization under certain circumstances, and that this process, at least from the classical point of view, is organized by the so-called recolliding periodic orbits. So what I'm going to show you today is that both orbits also organize the quantum dynamics, and when you compute a high harmonic generation spectrum from it, which is displayed here, you have signatures of those orbits on the spectrum. So what you might say right away is, well, my selection rules forbid any high harmonic generation with a circular polarization, sorry. So let's have a look about the selection rule. So for a given Q harmonic process involving Q photons, selection rules prohibit the generation of the harmonic by only the circularly polarized term. That is because for the Q photon of transition from the ground state using circularly polarized field, we have delta M equals plus minus Q, where M is the magnetic quantum number. For one photon Q harmonic generation, the down transition from the upper state with M equals plus minus Q back to the ground state is forbidden because delta M is not equal to a plus or a minus one. While for linear polarization, you do not have this trouble. So actually, what I'm going to show you is that this picture is not accurate, and you do have high harmonic generation with circular polarization, provided you do it in the right way. So let's go back to the beginning. So the beginning in strong field physics is a so-called strong field approximation, which allows you to explain, at least for linear polarization, how high harmonic generation spectrum look like. So if you do it for circular polarization, either from the quantum point of view, which is the surface here, or a classical mechanically, which is the red curve here, what you see is that the electron just spirals away from the core without ever returning to it. So you do not have the recollision process. Well, the trouble with the strong field approximation is that you are forgetting about the Coulomb potential. And what we've seen again last week is that, at least for some of the trajectories, since the Coulomb potential is pulling back the electron to the core, you can manage to actually bend your trajectory and drive it back to the core to have recollision. And this does not happen just by luck. It is an organized process which is regulated by a set of periodic orbits here in pink, which we called recolliding periodic orbits. And why is it important to note that? It is that those recolliding periodic orbits come with energy conditions. Meaning that if now you go back to your quantum simulation and you initialized correctly the system that is in an excited state, you can show that actually you do observe recollision in the quantum simulation. You still have a bit of ionization spiraling away, but you do have a part of the wave packet that is trapped to the core. So now if you look at the time evolution structure, you start from your excited state here, you evolve it in time, and you see how part of the wave packet remains in the vicinity of the core around your periodic orbit, and do recollide with it. Okay, so at this point, we know that if we start from an excited state, let's say for helium, argon, the few first rare gas atom, we do have recollision. So if I want to have harmonic generation, I would say, okay, I start my system in an excited state, and then I will observe harmonic generation. Well, almost. There is an ingredient that is missing in this recipe. And the reason for that is when now you look at the energy of those excited states in the dressed atom model, you see that those states are moved above the barrier. So now they are in the continuum, which means that even though your wave function here is recolliding back to itself, it's a continuum-to-continuum recollision, which do not lead to high harmonic generation. To have high harmonic generation, you need to recollide, to recombine, to a bound state. And in those systems, what you see that the only bound state that can remain due to the dressing of the field is the ground state, which means that to have high harmonic generation, you need, at the beginning, to have both excited and ground state. And when you combine those two, then you do observe high harmonic generation. OK, so let's go back to the selection rule. How do they fit in the picture? So they fit in the way that, again, since your excited states are now in the continuum, to describe the dynamics of the wave packets, you need a large number of quantum numbers. You need a large number of angular momenta, meaning that in this part of the wave packet that recollide, you do have some of them which are compatible with the recombination to the ground state. So you do have high harmonic generation. OK, so far, so good. So now that we know how to generate high harmonic generation, can we explain the properties of the high harmonic spectrum, which is displayed here? So here, from a quantum simulation, I'm showing the intensity of the radiation as a function of the harmonic number. And I see this very peculiar structure, where first, my harmonic spectrum rapidly goes down, and then have a strong revival in a well-defined range of harmonics. Well, those properties are explained by the characteristic of your recolliding periodic orbits. So remember, I told you that to have recollision, you are following those periodic orbits. And those periodic orbits only exist in a well-defined range of energies, which means that you have only a restricted window of returning energy for your electron, which means that when you convert it to the high harmonic generation, you have a well-defined range of harmonic that can be emitted. And below that, you have an energy gap which corresponds to the difference to the ground state. Another question that you can ask about this harmonic spectrum is, what is the polarization of my harmonics? Well, generally speaking, when you look at them, you will see that the polarization is random, except in two regions, which are the cutoff regions here. And actually, again, you can explain why those harmonics tend to log to circular emission. It's due to the stability properties of your recolliding periodic orbit. Why is it so? It is so because you need the stability of the orbit to imprint a regular recollision pattern to emit well-defined polarized harmonics. Yes.
Can you give some details again on this red line here? Is it quantum simulation or classical?
It's a fully quantum simulation.
Okay.
So you start your system initially.
2D or?
It's 2D.
Well, it
2D circular. So you start from some ground plus excited state, you integrate the time-dependent Schrödinger equation, and you compute the dipole acceleration, and you Fourier transform the system. So that's the usual way to do it.
How do you produce the coherent superposition, continuum, and ground state?
Okay, there are two parts in the question. There is the coherent part and the how to do it. Well, how to do it, you don't really care. You can be very clean and choose the ground state plus, let's say, the first excited state or the second excited state, or you can just take some distribution that will naturally correspond to a superposition of state. Either of them work very well to produce.
You said in order to satisfy the electric dipole selection rules, I mean, when you're having a 30,
yes,
30 order 30 harmonics, you need excited states.
Yeah, so you need that psi 0 equals some ground state, so A1 plus zero here, zero here. So the only condition that you need is that A0 is non-zero, otherwise you would recollide with nothing and do not produce harmonic. At least one of the AK is non-zero. Other than that, you can do really whatever you want.
I also didn't understand the reason why this why if you had 31 circular photons, why would you, could you explain why you don't have any to say 31 in this case? So you couldn't, how did you explain that you could, that this thing in the beginning was wrong?
Selection rule?
Oh. It's because you are, basically, you are not doing a state-to-state transition. Initially excited part of your wave function is now in the continuum. Remember that with circular precision, the dressing is a constant in amplitude. Okay, so if you want to accurately describe this part of the wave function, it's a continuum wave function. So there is a huge number of states, a huge number of angular numbers. So you still have a part of this continuum state that can actually go back to the ground state.
But this, what you describe it, is your start.
Yes, that's at the beginning.
At the beginning. So, and this is bound state, so, they all have the same angular momentum as the ground state.
No. No, they have, depending on the symmetry of the state, it can be 0, 1, 2, 3.
Yes. If you start with a wave packet, you're not starting with an excited state. An excited state has a well-defined.
No, you need a wave packet initially. The only thing that I'm saying is that you do not really care about what you put as A0 and AK, as long as it's not zero. So what I did, for instance, is ground state plus first excited S state, ground state plus first excited P state, to get the same results, a Gaussian distribution with a large standard deviation, which would be a superposition of many states. And in all those cases, you recover the same kind of spectrum.
The point is, the excited states have a very short lifetime. They immediately disappear, but the electrons leave from there, and they go to the ground state, which is very stable. That's the trick.
Yeah, but it's not like a state, it's a
wave. Oh yeah, it's no more a state. At the beginning, yes.
You can populate with a short pulse, for example.
Yes. That's really at the beginning, before the pulse is there. Once the pulse is there, there is no more meaning. They do not survive at all.
If you start with a ground state, you get nothing.
Yes.
You need three pulse to populate this.
Yes. Yeah, you have to initiate somehow your system like that. I'm not discussing on how to do it. A pre-pulse would be a good idea, obviously.
And obviously, you need n equals plus 1, so you could have a single circle polarized transition back to the ground zone.
No, that's at the beginning, when there is no field. Once the field is there, it will naturally spread the excited, initially excited part of your wave backend to a very large number of states.
You can have 1s, 2s as initial yes. wave backend. It works.
Yes.
That's good. That's yes. a secret.
In nature, will not work. Because as we discussed with algebra, you must coherently add many dipoles. So you must add k's. It's impossible to cooperatively create harmonics n square effect with n dipoles. Not only selection rules, it's extra requirement for harmonic generalization. Cooperative addition to get n square effect. You have n dipoles and n square effect. This
means yeah, but
you have to prove it.
Yes, but you...
But you find that in the Bokeh spectrum of
yes.
of your...
Is it 1s, 2p, 1s, 2s, you can see.
And you do not care about the initial phase. You do not care about the initial phase, meaning that if you had any phase here.
I agree with what you say on the other way you prepare your system.
Right.
But then if you, you will find in your Bokeh spectrum, you will find all these frequencies.
Right.
But it is not obvious.
They
can be observed because they are not coherent. Coherently emitted. The lack of coherence between them.
Yes. Each atom will get different recall in which phase.
Propagation.
Propagation, yes. Phase matching is another.
That's right.
If you have many, many atoms present, those will not be coherently emitted.
Yeah. How do you test this? That's
the single atom response is what is one thing.
Yes.
That the harmonic spectrum obtained in a real sample is different, and you will not see that. Yes.
Yeah, I understand it. So that's my question to you. How would I test if whether or not?
Let me point out that Margaret Murnane at the beginning of this workshop showed that you get circuitly polarized harmonics in certain cases. She showed that experimentally.
Well, you circularly polarized harmonics, yes.
Right.
But not from a circularly polarized field.
From a circularly polarized field. Which
is two beams. Absolutely. Quite a different thing. You have two beams.
I propose that we save the discussion after Francois completes his talk.
Yes, where were I? I think I was somehow done. Just to finish on the description of the spectrum, you might ask how is it scaling with the intensity? How it scales with the intensity that roughly this bump evolves as a 2UP plus IP. And the cutoff here, which is the highest harmonic in it, is 3.17 UP plus IP. The very same as for the linear polarization. Okay, so that's somehow all for it. I put a few references on the matter, and if you forgot about it and you want a 2-minute recap, you can look at the video abstract associated to this.
Excuse me, in the first part is coming from continue transition?
Here?
Yes.
No, I would say the perturbative response, because you do not have recollision allowed in this region. So it's like the first part of your harmonic spectrum in linear polarization.
Because you put there return energy, in fact, only for that part.
Sorry? Yes. Yeah, you can have recollision driven by RPOs only in this range of harmonics, only in this range of energies. Okay? Uh, Okay, so the second part is about ionization beyond the adiabatic approximation. So I think it's 2 weeks ago we had a nice presentation by Jan-Michael Rost about non-adiabatic effects in linear polarization. Today I'll discuss about circular polarization. And why do I focus about circular polarization? It's because let's say you want to compute ionization rates with circular polarization, and you do the standard adiabatic approximation. What does it consist? It consists of just thinking that, well, the time dependence in my system is bothering me, so I'm just going to drop it and consider as if the field were static at each time. And if you do that with circular polarization, since only the direction of the field is changing, you would expect your ionization rate only to depend, I mean, not to depend, sorry, on the frequency. Okay? So that's the static point of view. But actually, if you do a bit more carefully the analysis, you will see that indeed you have a static field part in the system, but you also have a Coriolis term due to the rotation, and this Coriolis term induces a lowering of the effective barrier. And if you have a lowering of the effective barrier, then you would expect your ionization to be easier. So quickly, how do you compute this barrier lowering? So you start out from your system, where you have the electric field that is turning with time, and you first perform a change of variables into a frame that rotates with the laser. So doing that, you will just freeze the electric field, which is basically what you want to do. But the price to pay for this non-inertial frame is the introduction of a Coriolis term in the system. The second step is another change of variables this time, non-canonical, to position velocities. Well, we don't care about the details, but what is interesting to see is that now you can identify this way an effective potential in the system in which indeed you have the potential plus the static field. But you also see the influence of the frequency, and this influence is proportional to minus the frequency squared, meaning that you will reduce the potential, and those effects will get more and more strong as the frequency is increased. Okay, so it's nice we think that we can lower the effective barrier. How does it matter for, let's say, real life? So it matters if, for instance, you compute the ionization rates at a function of the frequency, and it's what is displayed here for helium and the two p state of argon. So the frequency dependent ionization rates are the full color markers, while the static adiabatic ionization rates are the light ones. And when you compare them, you see that you can reach very huge difference. It is a logarithmic scale in the ionization state. And in particular, what you can see that it also depends on the angular momentum of the orbital from which you are ionizing. And of course, if you have different ionization rates, if now you compute the ionization yields, meaning at the end of the experiment, how many ionization you get, you will have a huge difference depending on, let's say, the orbital from which you are ionizing. So why is it interesting experimentally? It's interesting because there has been experiments for argon in which they observed different ionization phenomena depending on which orbital you are coming from. So somehow this difference between the angular momentum from which you are ionizing has already been observed experimentally. For helium, the adiabatic approximation has been tested also experimentally, but the conclusion was that it did not see it. And actually, when you look at the difference in the ionization rates or ionization yields, you see that it's very tiny, so it might not be reachable experimentally. So this is the reference of our latest paper with Andre that discuss this point. Okay, so to conclude very briefly, I hope that I convinced you that dynamics matters in our system. For the case of high harmonic generation, for instance, we've seen that not only we have recollision with circular precession, but also that if the system is correctly initialized, you can obtain high harmonic generation with very specific features in the spectrum. For the case of ionization, I hope I've convinced you that the non-adiabatic effects due to the profile of the electric field are very important and cannot be neglected in typical situation. I think, for instance, to the case of molecular imaging. Okay, so in those systems, you cannot just treat as if the field were the same, I mean, as in the instantaneous picture. So here is a summary of the references that I've presented today. And I thank you for your attention. And I also thank the organizer for this nice and intense workshop.
In the Kildish ionization, you in principle can have a form correction to the formula. Can it be tested in this setup with this argon use?
I've not done it, but yes, I guess it can. It can be tested. So here the idea was it's not here. Another nice feature once you have identified a time-independent Hamiltonian operator is that you can define precisely what the ionization rates through the resonances. So you do not have to do any approximation, expansion, stuff like that.
Can you add here?
Sorry?
Can you add here the effect of Coulomb field?
Yeah, you have the Coulomb, which is fully included.
So it's already here?
Yes. Yeah, it's a fully, everything is there in the computation of the ionization. Coulomb, laser, laser frequency, everything. Yes?
Just go back to this. When we came towards the end of the discussion, Andre said that it was enough to have one S2S.
Yes.
Yes.
So initially. So then it's okay, then you can say, we just make excited state, and then it works.
Yeah.
Just one excited state, it gets ionized, you can't return to it, it's empty. You need to return to a state that is not empty. This is harmonic generation, right? You always return to a state which is populated.
You have to recollide with something.
If you take an atom and you ionize all the states, you'll never get harmonic generation.
No, but I mean, if you have a...
That's the whole point of harmonic generation. You must always return to a stable state.
But you just need to create this superposition of the ground state and one excited state.
Coherent superposition, that's the coherent superposition.
But then
you don't care about the coherence.
But then you can keep, then you can probably...
You don't care about the coherence, we already discussed it. You don't care about the relative phases between the coefficients.
No, but it has to be coherent. I mean, if you have a density matrix that's really incoherent, there is no superposition overlap then.
At the beginning, don't care. In the dynamics, it will be preserved, of course. I mean, the intrinsic coherence of the dynamics when the field is there is crucial. What I'm saying that you don't care about how you prepare your system.
And you don't care about the phase, but it's coherent.
Yeah.
So in fact, the intensity depends on the product of A0 and A excited state of the harmonics. It comes out, you're right. And it shows that you leave from the excited state very readily, you get ionized very quickly, you get a big burst, but then that electron I can only emit back to the ground state, which is stable.
Okay, but I still don't understand.
But the last step is always a dipole step, right?
Yeah, if you have harmonic numbers, 31, say.
Yeah.
And then you have circular polarized driving laser field, and you're starting with S states, even if it's a superposition.
Yeah.
And then you are giving a final state to the continuum that has n equals plus 31.
So that's perturbative. It's not perturbative, that's the whole point.
In the SFA, you have two
in dipoles. Perturbation theory, you get no harmonics, period, with circular polarized light. But this is not perturbative, that's the difference.
But it's still there.
It's not a state to state.
It's dipole transition every
continuum.
Time, but of course, it can go up and down.
Yes, yeah, I mean, it's beyond rotating wave approximation. You must go beyond rotating wave approximation, up and down, so on. It's meant to perturbate between the different states. The only way I see, but still I don't believe it in the laboratory can be. But single, well, I understand how it happens in single dipole, in single atom.
Well, it's been observed experimentally now by Margaret Murnin, except that she observes every harmonic, the ellipticity is different. Some harmonics go this way, some harmonics go that way. What was her talker first thought?
Right. But their method can be easily explained by selection rules. They have two beams. Yes, of course, they have two beams.
She gets 40 circular polarized harmonics.
But she used two beams, two circular beams.
Yeah, but there's no difference.
The selection rules are fine.
But I mean, if we look at the SFA as it was originally written up by Levenstein, we have one dipole transition, which is the tunneling.
The SFA does not work for this.
No, I know you need a periodic orbit, but just to look at the selection rules there, you have a transition to the Volkov state, which you then perturb with the
property,
and then you have another dipole to go back. So the tunneling step in Keller's way looks like dipole operator, but to Volkov state, and then the Volkov state.
No, but the last thing is always a dipole operator back to your ground state.
Yeah, and also the first step, looking in the original.
But what I understand, so once you start with an S state at the beginning, even if it's a superposition,
one has two S.
So and then you have circularly polarized light. So at the end, you only emit circularly polarized harmonics, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Only in the cutoff.
I don't understand
what you mean. We don't understand.
Here it's whatever it is.
Because I mean, I could see that through coupling, you couple up and L's and down, but at the end, you always make one dipole step, and it has to be M has to change by one.
No. From the excited state, but that excited state is a whole bunch of states. I mean,
But it's always
mixed by the field, and there may be n equal to one states in there. Probably, we don't know.
If you have spherical symmetry, the selection rules should.
Yeah, but you don't have it.
You've broken it with the field.
The field is
Hamiltonian. See, the first two potential plus the Coriolis terms conserve sphericity, but not the static part.
You have broken it in the same way that for a molecule you have broken
the symmetry of the system. That's why you get circular polarized harmonics.
See, the LZ is not a conserved quantum number because you have the.
That's not conserved
either. You have the linear field. And this is why when you phrase everything in terms of the conservation of otherwise of M, this is, I mean, leading to a state in which the M is not conserved. This is why when he goes into this intermediate state, it's a huge mixture of all kinds of M states, depending on how you get to that state. So therefore, all kinds of transitions are possible from the intermediate state to the to the
because between them, Rabi frequencies are larger than separation. That's why rotating wave approximation doesn't work. It's possible to see this. I agree, but it is single atom response. Very hard task to show that this can be
cooperated. Okay, so here is again my question. How can I resolve this question of whether or not I would observe it?
We'll do that, But I mean, Margaret Bernay has observed certain polarized harmonics now.
But if
you use two circularly polarized pulses together, you could prove there's always recollision. We've just done this recently. Yeah.
So whether
whether or not you can transfer the single atom result to a coherent result, is this question is true for any kind of harmonic.
Sure, it's true for linear harmonic.
But Schrödinger is proved analytic.
No, I know that, but this is no different than any other single atom response that you are trying to transfer to high harmonic generation.
So, but for the harmonic attenuation process being observed, you should have an exact conservation of the photon momentum. Exact. It means they should have the same direction. Opposite, the harmonic should be emitted in the same direction as the...
So
if you start from an excited state and come back with the atom with in the wrong state,
right.
That I disagree with you,
okay.
Then you don't conserve the photon momentum because... And you have no harmonics. You should find that in the power spectrum of your dipole.
Right.
That's okay. But they will not add coherently when you have a sample of atoms.
Why not?
Because there is no conservation of the momentum.
Because then the process is a recoil space. The recoil. You have recoil.
All the atoms emit, sir.
Under condition,
all circle in the same direction, and the photon will come up.
They will not
have
that current.
No, I don't agree.
No,
we'll see.
We can discuss.
No.
And my brother is writing the Maxwell Schrödinger program, which he will present tomorrow. It's coming along, but there's experimental proof now.
Not of this particular mechanism.
No. It's quite different mechanism.
No, it's not.
More name, of course.
It's not Hamiltonian, for two circularly polarized pulses together. It's exactly that Hamiltonian, except the term E0x is E0x cos omega t. And that force is always recollision. We just done the theory. And that supports Margaret Bernays' results that was shown the first week of this conference. It's too bad she's not here. Right? Yeah.
Well, okay. I mean, let's thank François.